You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, I thought of you over the weekend. I was stuck to my TV, which is not unusual at the weekend, but even stucker than before. And I thought you must have so much material to read in The Economist and The Financial Times because of what's been going on. There must have been a lot of really interesting articles.
If you think about it, I think the big news, and this is for me, it's not big news, was the collapse of FTX, you know, the Bankman-Fried crypto exchange, and I mean investigations into it. It's something that hasn't really attracted my interest, but I was drawn in to try and understand what happened there, and you know, just a sigh of relief that that I've never been involved. You know, just exposes how difficult it is to invest in a company that's where there's no regulation. But Lindsay, the one thing, and I'll talk to you. We'll go on to this afterwards. It's something that always worries me, and is how businesses can just take punts like this with other people's money. And I'm talking about a lot of the private equity firms who just put hundreds of millions up and say, oh, well, it's nothing. Let's have a punt at that. I would never do that for a client. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I might make mistakes. I might make a mistake and a misjudgment in company and it goes off, does something. But when you buy that, the reasons you buy it are secure and have been well thought of, you know, well looked into. Anyway, that's something that always irks me when people get arrogant with other people's money and just have a punt at something. But we can talk about that some other time or even later.
Well, I mean, if they'd got it right, it wouldn't have been bad. But the point is, it's unregulated. And
yes,
you don't know what you do. This chap apparently who owned one of the platforms, I don't know if it was FTX, it probably wasn't. That was the one I think he was trying to save. He was worth $16 billion. And then he and suddenly this ghastly sell-off occurred, and then I think it was the BBC said, and now he's worth three, and they said no, not $3 billion. No, he hasn't gone for three. It's $3 he's worth officially, which of course is nonsense.
You see what the other thing is at. Go have a look at how many covers he made in the last month or so. You know whether it was. On the cover of, you know, how many newspapers? I'm trying to think. I think he was on Fortune.
Mm.
He was one of the, the big stories on Fortune magazine. So, the next hero, the next Buffett, you know, in his world.
Oh my God.
But people make the statements without really doing in-depth investigation or alternatively, not understanding. So it becomes journalistic, you know, it becomes something that journalists run after and they're taken in by the story without really understanding what's beneath it or what's below it. And I always, where you're looking after money, somebody else's money, you have to be extra, extra careful. You know, it's a huge responsibility. And I'm always critical of them. Have a look at the amount of money that he raised from other people. How do they justify that? Okay, it's not a much, you know. People says, it's only a little. It doesn't matter. It won't affect us. But I always say, well, what was the thought process behind it? You know, anyway, do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Of course.
Every investment you make must be well thought out, not just, let's have a chance and a FOMO, a little bit of nervous of missing out, let's have a go at it. You know, you can do it with your own money. I don't care what Lindsay Williams does with his own money. But if you're handling other people's money, you can't do that. And most of these big funds are handling other people's money.
Yeah. Well, a year ago, he was the hero, as you said, because Bitcoin was 65,000, whatever it is. And then its ultimate demise. It'll still stay around. People will punt and people will use it as a punting vehicle. But it's not never ever going to be a reserve currency, an alternative to the dollar or the yuan or the yen or the euro or whatever it is. It is always going to be a punting vehicle. And I've always thought that, and I get shot down by people. Why don't you have me on your show? I said, because I don't want to talk about this. I really don't want to. Because you're going to promote it. You're using me as a platform for promoting your platform. No, thank you very much. I don't believe in it. I don't understand it. And it'll end in tears. And I don't want people to lose money, as you did, David. You don't, you feel people's pain because you handle private clients and you know what they go through when they lose money. But this is off the scale, 75%. It's like being invested in Meta, for goodness sake, which was horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I spoke to a very clever chap at a fund manager in London the day after that massive rally we saw, 7.35% in the NASDAQ. And we were saying that day, you've never seen spikes like this to the upside. We've no downside, you can understand. But for something to go up that amount, and this guy said, we looked down the list, we analyzed the data, we saw what had happened, and we said all the drivers were the stocks that had massive short positions going into that inflation data. And he said that was it. He said, be very, very careful. On one data point, don't get carried away with one data point, i.e. a lower print than expected in American inflation. And he actually put a really good case together for that, especially that short position and short covering argument. I think you agree with that as well, don't you?
Well, there's something more than that. I think because it wasn't only the stock market that went up, it was bonds that went down.
Same thing.
Well, yes, you know,
short positions being covered.
If it is short covering, why do people cover shorts? You know, they must feel, hold on, there's change in the air, that maybe the next data point will be equally as positive, meaning that inflation coming down. So we've been feeling this way, you know, that change is coming soon. That we're ending the ultra bearish positions.
Yes.
We're not, no one's ready to rush in. No one's ready to make a big case. But these are signs of some kind of bottoming in the market. I would feel more secure if the, you know, when the S&P gets above 40,000, it's at 39,000 something there. So I think we need another 2 or 3% confirmation. And we might then get a little more excited that you know, it's broken that downtrend and is starting to establish a new uptrend. It's pretty early days. But then other positive signs. What if you look even today with a Waller, who is he's a Fed governor from the U.S. I don't know which state he represents, of the 12, but he's also come out, you know, we're not changing our course. We're standing by this, and it's too early, the terminal rate. You know, the same story that Biden has been pushing. The thing is that these kind of statements no longer have the power to shift the market down as they did before. It's just kind of brushed aside. So we wait for more signs, but I think what we've seen now are, you know, have kind of given a little bit of comfort to the market. And I'd be very nervous to get too negative.
No, negative, but don't get carried away either. And I think what the interesting reaction, or rather the upshot of what happened last week when there were these massive moves, 5.5% in the S&P, 3.7% in the Dow, 7.3% in the NASDAQ, which I haven't seen and you haven't seen for a while, if ever, on the upside. I think what it's done is cleaned out speculators and hedge funds to a certain extent. And now the market is not in equilibrium. Obviously, there's always going to be a bias towards up or down, bull versus bear. But I do think that now, if the market rises, it's going to rise in much smaller increments.
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes, definitely. Oh, no, that you can take as a given. Mm. You know, we're not going to get – where you've got interest rates at 4 or 5%, you can't expect the kind of moves that we've had before. Mm. There might be recovery stocks, you know, where stocks have been oversold. For example, you might find a Disney that was, you know, slammed down to 85, might recover to 110 or 120, which represents a 10 or 15% or 20%, you know, turnaround from a very oversold position. But I don't think you can, what you're trying to say, and I think where I agree, don't expect the kind of gains that we've seen over the last decade or so, not in a higher interest rate environment, definitely.
But you like that, don't you? You like good steady gains from solid companies that pay dividends. Yeah. You like that.
Yeah, definitely. No, I'm much more secure in those kind of markets.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't win. You can't win in markets where the movements are so, you know, violent in either direction. It's very difficult to run money that way. So you feel, you know, I've always set my benchmark at, like, if I can do 6% in dollars for a client, I think, you know, I'd be very happy. I'm talking in dollars, you know, and I'm talking in an inflation environment of 2-3%. So you're getting to, you know, that's all we want. Whereas in the past, we've had 18% up 1 year, 20% up the next year, and then down 20% the following year.
Yes.
It's very disconcerting, and it makes people insecure, and they look, you know, they can't handle it. And I can understand that. So yes, I'm definitely would like to get back to the old traditional markets that we do.
Yeah.
Old boring markets. Yeah.
No, I love boring. I love a good bore occasionally. It's fantastic. The day after that CPI data, incidentally, one of your favorite sectors did very, very, very well indeed. I think it was Richemont was up 13% the next day, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know.
That was a big move. Yeah. Huge move.
Well, I don't know why. I'm saying.
Well, they had a trading update as well, which was quite favorable, but obviously it got caught up in the whole basket buying story on the JSE after what had happened in the States the night before. But that's very good news. I mean, are luxury goods buyers immune to recession, to downturns and that sort of thing? I think they probably are, given the sale of that art, which we spoke about with Viv Govender last week. I mean, that shows you there's an awful lot of money sloshing around.
Yes. No, those markets, to an extent, are bulletproof because there are a lot of rich people, and particularly at the high end of the luxury market, you know, like Richemont, where you've got Van Cleef & Arpels and you've got Cartier. You know, you don't walk into those shops unless you've got lots of thousands of dollars to invest. Do you understand? You know, I wear a Swatch. I think it costs $100. I don't know. And it keeps time, strangely enough.
Why do you need a watch?
It's a brilliant.
Why don't you just look at your phone? Why do you need a watch?
Yeah, I do sometimes. Sometimes sometimes you do need a watch just to look down, because if you're in a meeting and you want to know the time, you know, you can't go and look at your phone.
So you
kind of surreptitiously have to kind of look at your arm. But I mean, my Swatch, I think, cost maybe $100 or something like that. And that's a maximum, and it's kept time for 4 or 5 years absolutely perfectly in that. So I'm not one who likes to walk around with, what's it, 100,000 and 100,000 rand watch or 200,000, 50. You've got to be crazy, you know. But listen, it attracts a lot of people. They love, you know, some people have got more than one or two or three or four of them. But that's why we buy them. So what's happened, one of the big moves is that with the dollar as strong as it has been, a lot of Americans are going into Europe and, you know, buying these well-made watches. I mean, and listen, these are craft watches at very good prices, and jewelry as well. So it's been remarkable how well luxury has held up.
It's interesting because watches, I don't know for what reason that watches have been an outperformer. But, you know, I watch something called the Antiques Roadshow on a Sunday night on the BBC, and sometimes some bloke will come in and it was a watch.
The secondhand ones.
Yeah, exactly.
About?
This thing, it's all scratched and everything. And he said, there was only, 200 of these made, et cetera, and yours isn't in great condition. But, I have to say that this is a £25,000, watch. And I know a chap whose name I won't mention, but he's a watch dealer, essentially. He buys and sells watches for wealthy people. He's made a fortune over the last 10 years, an absolute fortune, because they're so highly sought after. And if you've got the context, it's like an asset class on its own within the luxury goods industry.
I inherited a pair of cufflinks. In fact, not from my relations were all poor. You know, no rich relations, nothing. I've got nothing to look forward to, any kind of secret inheritances or that. But my wife's had a great aunt.
I don't think you should really just speak about your relations in terms of money, David. I really think you should say he was a lovely chap, but he didn't leave me any money, but I don't want money. But anyway, you know, go on about your wife.
So my wife's great aunt never had children, but her husband was quite a dapper man. Oh, yeah. And he left a pair of cufflinks, which were absolutely beautiful, which we don't wear today. No one's going to wear them today. But on the one, I think on the one cufflink had a very small diamond. It was like gold with a small diamond. Mm. And the other was actually a watch. Oh. You know, the other cufflink was a little watch, you know, and in perfect working condition. And I can't remember, it's not a Rolex, but it's a very popular and a high level name. It's absolutely beautiful. So, I mean, that's about the closest I've got to luxury watches, in this cufflink, which I've kept in a safe. You know, I'm never going to wear it. I don't know what's going to happen somewhere along the line when I'm gone and my great grandchildren come and look and say, look at this. You know, they'll go open a safe for something. What it will be worth, I have no idea.
You get it appraised. You know, those things can differ. You know, separate, you know, stealthy fingers can pick those sort of things up when you're not looking. I would definitely get it appraised.
So, yeah, but I mean, it's that's about it. You know, other than that. I'm not a jewelry person. That's why I always say I like to buy the shares, not the goods, you know, and so on.
The only watch I've ever really wanted is either a Patek Philippe, an antique one, should I ever come across it and I had the money, or a Cartier Tank, you know, a discreet little square-faced, well, not square, rectangular-faced thing, a Cartier Tank. So if you're thinking of a kind present for me. I'll send you my birthday details. David, let's have a look at other things as well. Quite a busy day.
You know, the other thing we haven't done is the politics side. You asked me what I read on the weekend.
Yes, please.
I found that fascinating. Yeah. I'm absolutely enthralled by what's happening in America at the moment in terms of politics, how voters have rejected Trump.
That's fantastic.
He might not admit that. You know, he's not going to admit it. He's going to come out fighting and blaring. But I think it was a comment from Mike Pompeo that I read without reference to directly to Trump. But, you know, Mike, I think he also might have aspirations. But he made a comment saying, you know, I think you want to elect someone who wants to look after the people, not air grievances. In other words, Trump will only stand so that he can get back at Biden and get back at the people who kicked him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's got no other intentions. And that was, I'm interpreting what Pompeo said. I might have got it slightly wrong, but I mean, I think people are tired of, you know, that the 2020 vote was rigged and so on, and they want to move on. And I think that's coming out from commentary, and that's come out in the election. The Democrats have held on to the Senate. They've got their 50 seats with one to go, which they can now have 51. And even the House is still, you know, they're likely to lose it, but by a very small margin, which is, you know, which is also, I think, a move that, you know, that the Republicans have lost ground. So I think there's going to be changes. I think as much as noise as Trump makes, I doubt whether he'll, you know, stay the course. And Xi and Biden have just met now.
I saw that. There was some nice backslapping and a cautious optimism there. But you don't know what goes on behind closed doors when they have a real meeting. But there's clearly animosity between the two of them. But at least they've met, which is really really good news.
David, I think that's important. You know, they say, listen, we might not agree, but at least we're talking. You know, it's better than not talking. So,
exactly. Keep the lines of communication open. I think they both agree on that. I think the best thing that could happen is tomorrow, around about this time, Trump sitting there having his third KFC of the day or something, and and he makes the announcement and he says he's going to run again. I think that would be, if you're a Democrat, I don't know if you are and you don't need to tell me, but I would think that was the best thing for the Democrats if he runs, because everyone, apart bar two that he endorsed for the midterms, has lost. Herschel Walker might lose as well. Have you seen this creature? The one that's has an anti-abortion stance, and yet two women have come forward and said, well, he urged me to have an abortion after we had an affair. And it was quite funny. There was an American satirist TV presenter. I don't know how to pronounce his surname. Bill Maher. Do you know him? M-A-H-E-R.
Have you ever seen him? Yeah, I like him very much.
He's very, very good. He's got a great voice. Smart. And he's very, very dry. And he said,
he's an actor. He was. He's been in movies.
Really?
But he's doing much better as a talk show host and very outspoken and very articulate.
He said Herschel Walker has come out recently and said that he's looking forward to his first term, which is more than his unborn children can look forward to. Because he said, I just can't understand it. And people actually vote for this freak.
Yeah.
Anti-abortionist who's encouraged his affairs to have an abortion. And they did.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Republican Party is in tatters, I think. David, what else have we got today? I've written down Richemont, we've done that. Omnia, down 6%. ShopRite, up 7% after its quarterly operational update. Breit, don't know what that's done, but it was up quite smartly.
They unbundling...
Premier, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're going to list on the JSE, which is probably a good move. What's Breit got to do with Premier? Telkom and Vodacom.
Premier and Tigers years ago were major rivals, particularly in the bread maize area and other parts. You know, so the two fams, the Blooms and the Frankels, were very prominent families. I just looked today. I mean, Premier obviously has gone through a lot of transitions as Tigers, but Premier, if they do list it, might have a market cap of 6-7 billion.
So small,
which is well below Tigers. Yeah, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's in line with some of the other smaller food companies like, Astral, Oceana, and so on. But still, it would be a second life for them, and also just give Breit a little bit of breathing room. Then there were the others that I think you might have missed.
Telecoms.
Vodacom and Telcom.
Yeah, I was about to come to that. The telecommunications sector. Yeah. Suddenly, Telcom came out with an update, down 6.5% last time I looked, and Vodacom, its results, down 5.5%. I was thinking about this, and I'm in the Netherlands. You know, there's fierce competition for your mobile money. Every single night, you get three or four ads for three or four different companies. I was with Vodafone over here, and I was paying €85 a month for the full package and everything. You know, you can go anywhere, and it's unlimited this and unlimited that. And then a friend came to me and said, "Why are you paying this amount of money? I can get you €35 a month with T-Mobile." And I looked at it, and I went to see T-Mobile, the local shop. And I said, "Yeah, you'll get a new iPhone, and it's $35 a month." And I said, "Okay, let's switch over." And I suddenly think that there's so much competition, and the margins are becoming so wafer thin. I don't know anything about the industry, but I can understand why old, stuck in their ways companies like maybe Vodacom and Vodafone are losing out to the more nimble, smaller companies. Although T-Mobile's not a small company, but it doesn't look good,
What you're exposing is how difficult it is for them to hold on to customers and, how you can switch as you did. The other thing is it's all about data. And I've always said that, data, we want you to put up, we want you to give us 5G, 6G, but we don't want to pay for it. You know, do you mind, do you mind giving it to us free? And that's why it is such a difficult industry. You know, it's very cutthroat. It's very and requires a lot of capex. And also you can see how geared it is as interest rates are coming up here, how it is affecting and cost increases, how it is affecting their margins.
Yeah.
So
is it a sector that you would look at if it came down far enough or not?
Yeah, maybe. I have to look more closely at this one. You know, it surprised me a little. Vodacom, I know that they've spent quite a lot in Ethiopia, a startup, which has probably been written off there. But you can see the market's reaction by knocking them down about 6%. And I think the other one is Telkom, you know, because Telkom's been in the news or in the limelight because of MTN's bid, which MTN have now rejected and leaves them exposed. And these results just show you how vulnerable Telkom is. You know, they're trying to shift their business model towards contract type clients away from prepaid. You know, they're trying to reposition their business, but you need a lot of money. And you need, in this kind of environment, a lot of spending, and you're going to have to give up margin. So I don't know where this leaves them.
What happened to Rain? Have Rain also dropped out? Eh? Yeah, it's massive. I mean, this share was over 50 rand a share. It wasn't that long ago, I don't think. It's now 33 rand 60 a share. Mm. What has Rain done? Have they also pulled out from the bidding war? Or there's no bidding war now? It's just them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is going to be between them, if there is any kind of talk. I think there might be other suitors, but This is a complicated area, you know, and I think for the bit players and, you know, those on the margin, I think it's very difficult for the Rains, for the Telcoms, for the Cell Cs, you know, for companies like that. If it's hard enough for MTN and Vodacom, you can imagine how difficult it is for smaller players like this. They've got to find other areas. They've got to go into payments. They've got to go into those kind of areas if they're going to hold on to their profitability and value.
Okay, let's talk about that. So let's just sum this up now. You liked what happened last week. You liked the fact that inflation came down. You liked the fact that some people are now projecting that interest rates won't go as high in the United States and probably elsewhere as much as initially predicted. But you're not going to rush in. But on the other hand, maybe the low has been put in place, David.
Yeah, I think that is the situation. I think we've seen the worst of the markets, and I confirm what you're saying. The turnaround, don't expect it to be a runaway turnaround. You know, don't expect this to roar ahead. You're going to have to do your homework. You're going to have to look for those solid companies that can actually function in an environment where rates are going to remain high, well, higher than they have been for the last decade. So you need good operational efficiencies, and that might take out a lot of businesses that were favorites last year, the year before, and so on. So this is a more serious market, but there's nothing wrong with it. You know, serious in that you can't be these young Robin Hooders. You know, it's going to be very difficult for them.
Well, that's a shame.
And for the crypto people, you know, for all those speculative type. You know, the speculative market that you could fund with zero interest, you know, where you could borrow money for zero and take a big punt. I think that's going to be harder. So, you know, you're going to have to work a little harder for your money now if you are a financial advisor.
Let's talk about football now briefly. It was the last week. You know, it was Christmas, essentially, and Arsenal are top at Christmas. They look really, really not only efficient, but also they have some flair about them with people like Jesus. Yeah. He's getting quite excited.
He's great. You know what? He hasn't scored, but I don't think you can take anything away from the skills. Yes, he hits the post and just misses. He just hasn't had luck on his side. But he draws people. I think he's playing with more freedom than he was ever allowed at Man City. And I don't take anything away from Man City at all. You know, but Arsenal have given him a lot more freedom, and I think he's a brilliant player. I think, you know, for Arsenal, it was an absolute win.
It was a sniff. So, they got him for nothing, and he looks as though he's enjoying himself. He's smiling. And the thing is that he may not be getting a hat-trick, but the number of assists that he gives, it's almost as good as a hat-trick because he's assisting his fellow forwards. That is very, very good. Yeah. Speaking of City, they were completely bamboozled by Brentford. I don't know if you saw the game, but they didn't know how to deal with these fast chaps like Ivan Toney. They couldn't deal with it. I saw from the
Did
first...
Did you see the game? I mean, the goal that they scored at the end, Brentford.
Yes, of course. I watched every minute of that game.
City were pedestrian to get back.
They were rubbish.
They just kind of drifted back. Yeah, they were rubbish getting back. And you just saw Brentford sending, with 1 minute to go or however minutes, you know, Brentford, you thought were holding, and they sent, I don't know, three chaps racing ahead
there. It was four against two for that last goal, but anyway, City will come back. Pep Guardiola was just he looked drained after that game, because what they did was they said, okay, we can't compete with them, you know, man for man with tiki taka passing football. Yeah. The first thing they did when they got it back to their goalkeeper after about 30 seconds, that goalkeeper launched a missile up towards the area, and then you knew that was going to be their tactic. Just whack it up. Our players are faster than yours. They may not be as skillful, but goodness me, it works so beautifully. I'm actually pleased for Brentford. And that's it. And you haven't seen the Ronaldo story, which annoyed me enormously this morning.
I will go into that.
Have a look at that. We'll
I'm
speak about it.
I'm disappointed because I've always admired his professionalism and attitude on the field. But I think that he's also got to recognize that he's not the youngster, you know, he's not the kid that he was. He's 36, 37. You've got to open the way for new players, and you just got to accept that, you know. It's very hard, like an old pop star, you know, rock singer.
Or boxer.
But, you're a boxer, I watch the rugby as well, which you don't watch, I mean.
No, I didn't.
But that also was brutal. And the cricket I loved.
Yes, of course, England winning the T20. What's there not to love? I mean, come on now. Ben Stokes, he's a national treasure.
He's a good team, hey, the Pakistani, it's a brilliant team. And that's why, I mean, when that bowler, what's his name, Rashid, was you know, that was a gift. I mean, it's odd that because he's you could see how they were struggling, even Stokes against the pace and movement, and I just couldn't get close to the ball. But anyway, fortune favored them.
And next, when is it? Is it Saturday or
Sunday night?
And is the host? It's Qatar. What's the opening game? Is it the winners from the previous World Cup playing first, or what is it? Or is it the host that play
first? Whatever it is, I'll be there.
Yeah, me too.
I don't care.
Good. I get two Christmases this year. Fantastic. David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time. David is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.